check, and I indicate that the Minister of the Department of Education were invited by the Select Committee of Education and Recreation last month to give a status report, a progress report on education. So the members of that committee will determine our presentation, but we will not stipulate the report. Chair, if you allow, I will not go through the introduction because Mr. Tom and the other colleagues have already done that. But what I have done is to just indicate where we're coming from in terms of what the diagnostic analysis indicated. From the diagnostic analysis, what we've decided to do, Honorable Chair, is to just lift the most pertinent points that strongly believe that the committee would need to know about. And we then, at the end of the presentation, summarize the other areas that the government has elaborated in the diagnostic analysis. And the four or five points that we've spoken about elaborated in the presentation would include procurement of healthcare services. You know, that was a very issue in the province, and surely the committee would like to know where we are with that. Issues that relate to the compensation of employees. You recall, Chair, we have the biggest budget in the province. But the biggest slice of that budget goes to the compensation of employees at a ratio of 83%. I'm excluding conditional grants on that. We've reflected a bit, Chair, about the norms and standards. You know that was still a big issue in the province. We reflected a bit about that. There's one slide on the audit outcome. So basically, that would be the outline of the presentation itself. Some of the successes, Chair, as I've indicated, in no particular order, would include this one. On MPSM. And as members would recall, MPSM would include in the main, there are other parts or facets of the MPSM, but in the main, we focus on tertiary satisfaction. Members will recall that in 2012, we introduced the curriculum and assessment policy statements, and that the introduction was staggered. In grades 1, 2, 3, and 10 in 2020, in grades 4, 5, 6, and 11 in 2013, next year we'll be implementing in grade 7, 8, 9, and 12. That would be in 2014. And therefore the procurement of these materials moving in now with the introduction of the phased in curriculum implementation process. For 2012, we procured for grades 1, 2, and 3, and 10, grade 1, 2, 3 being the foundation phase. But we also procured a top-up on the whole curriculum of about 20%. But I've selected subjects for grades 10 and 11. The members will recall and we've stated this at the previous meetings, that for the 2012 school calendar year, or 2012-2013 financial year, we did not have an allocation for MTSM. The amount of money that was there was intended to procure textbooks and stationery for the following year. Normally the allocation for the current year is intended to procure for the swing. So we didn't have that amount of money for the school calendar 2030. The bold decision was taken that we used that amount of money to procure those textbooks. It was critical for us to do so because of the introduction of the curriculum assessment policy statement. It would have been the first year that the curriculum caps on that 2015 at the time. So we needed to buy those books. So in a haste, when I was deployed around May, the members of the court, as the first assignment that we had to deal with, we just bought the books. And of course, because at the time when problems are coming from all over, confusion whether the school's orders would be the ones that are placed, or the orders that are centralized would be the ones that have been placed, issues that related to the unreliability of the data set, all these things kicked in. And we try to systemize a cross-process to come up with the best bullet, where the province has now a strategy on the procurement and delivery of MTSMs in the province. And implementing that strategy, we're closely monitoring it, and we're improving it by a day. We can say, Chairperson, that for the 2012 procurement process, more than 300,000 learners in the foundation phase, that's grades 1, 2, and 3, received the books. It was the textbooks, it was the workbooks, and the big books, phonics, those are the curriculum and all the difference between those books. And it was more than 178,000 of the manner of the way you drink 10 of the 6 of those books. Let the end of the year will come comfortably safe, and will come with the comfort 100%. Grades 1, 2, 3, and 10. Honorable Chair and members, you will also recall that the Treasury then gave us an additional allocation of 510 as part of the adjustment budget process that was around October. All we needed for that was a letter confirming the Treasury would actually commit the money, and that letter was received earlier than the adjustment process. And we used that letter to procure all grades 4, 5, 6, and 11. But if we waited for October, come the reopening of the schools in 2013, we have had a problem that should have not helped us. So we used that letter to guarantee that the money is coming, and in the department we did some internal processes for us to be able to release that money with the hope, in fact, it was more than hope, that the money was going to be coming. And indeed, Chairperson, it did come. 510 was split into around 380 for textbooks and 130 for stationery. These amounts of money are significant. Chair, somewhere along the line you will see why that point becomes very important. And the light stated that for 2018 we were procuring books from grades 4 to 6 and 11, and those books were kept alive. Again, for the intermediate phase, which is 4, 5, 6, we procured more than 300,000 books, and we procured 172,000 books for grade 11. Now, in terms of planning, Honorable Chair, you will recall that the grade preceding would be the grade you procure for in the following year, assuming 100% pass. You're not promoting the syndrome of saying pass one, pass on. But you can't do it in any other way than considering it that way. You can't procure all the current numbers because those numbers the following year will not be there. So the input of the previous year is actually considered as the basis for the procurement in the ensuing year. So that's how we did that. If you recall, Honorable Chair, the numbers in 2012 for grade 10 were 178. So you could see that we're not far off, because the actual number of learners that benefited was 172. So we had a dropout for children, and then that thing because of the books we were not able to account for. Again, at the end of that process, we're comfortable about 100% coverage. Stationary Chair was procured for the whole member population in the province. There are about 1.66 million from grade R to grade 12. Now, the reason that I said the amounts that I stated earlier significant will come here. The allocation Chair for the textbooks, which was based on the lowest price, we always use this lowest, not the cheapest. The lowest price on the prices that you see on the books on the national catalog. The total amount was 382 million. Now, because of the consultation that we had directly with the publishers, because we procured directly from the publishers, the total amount for us to procure textbooks was 236. This amount of 382, those are real prices that are in the national catalog, already agreed to with consultation or through consultation between DBE and those publishers. But further to that, we then consulted for further reduction, and we had that savings, total savings of about 147. Similarly for the stationery check, in 2012, when we procured stationery in 2011 for 2012, we paid 259.5 million. And because now we've taken a position to procure directly from the manufacturer of stationery, the total amount there that we actually paid was 129. If you compare with the amount we paid the previous year, where the savings are about 50.2%. If we use that amount of money of the 2012 procurement process and factor into CPI, the savings there would have been 54%. But I did not want to use that one because that's not the real thing. The real thing, what we paid the previous year and what we paid for the 2013. So this central procurement process, in our view, again, we use the goods that the Minister Manuel used to speak to. For the 2014, which we are currently procuring and delivering now, we have an allocation check of 402 million. We require 762 million for us to be able to cover 7, 8, 9, and 12. And again, those amounts were based on the lowest amounts of money that were in the national catalogs. Now, unfortunately, the allocation was 402. We had thought at the time Treasury corrected or gave us the additional 510, and our baseline had shifted from the 249 we had in 2011 to 510 for 2013. And we missed the point, because their baseline was the previous year of 249. So we moved in that fashion using CBI and whatever pressure point of the truth test to give us the amount of 402 for 2014. That's the procurement process for 2014 in this current year. And we immediately had a deficit of more than 350 million. And then what added more pressure on this one, Chair, was the realization that there were textbooks that were not delivered in 2012 and 2013 because they were not included in the national catalog. The natural sciences and technology is one of them. There are Africans, the first additional language textbooks that were not included. I think there's another African, I think it's Qigong, that was not included. And it put more pressure on the already pressure budget that we had. But we needed to think, you know, doing tap dancing on this one. We use the definition of the nonsense standard, that the nonsense standards by provision are intended for textbooks or LTSM as well as non-LTSM imperatives. In the NOMS money that was supposed to be directly transferred to schools were the 840. So we just pulled these amounts of money together and were a budget allocation for NOMS in their totality of 1.2 billion. We just did simple arithmetic and literally cut that in the middle to get 620 for the textbooks and 620 for the for NOMS transfers. And that improvement was able to actually cover us or cushion us and to some extent that at least would have been sure that we procure and fully cover the levels 7, 8, 9, and 12 for the 2014 school calendar. This is very significant for us, Chair, but we did break the law. We just used the definition of the norms. And of course, what would have been transferred to the schools became less than what we ordinarily would have done if we didn't do that. But what was important for us is for those levels to have the books. So, with this current, the year 2014, in the 620, what we've done, Chair, is to just say 145 will be earmarked for stationery. Again, stationery is for grade R to grade 12. And the 475 will be used for the textbooks. Again, grade 7, 8, 9, and 12 for the new textbooks, as well as the textbooks for grades 4, 5, 6, 10, and 11 for natural sciences, Africa's first stationery. We are convinced, Chair, that we will have some savings. And the savings we want, after we discuss this with the MEC, to assist the learners, particularly the blind ones, because these textbooks are not quite usable by learners who are blind. But at least we are able to supply the schools, special schools, particularly those that cater for the blind, with a portable abode, that at least the words are able, they are able to translate them into the language that they use. We've ordered and have received 6 million textbooks, 6 million, the biggest consignment that we've ever got in the province, and to an extent that we needed to have a second warehouse for us to be able to manage that, to cover fully the 1.66 million for the stationery. The stationery, as we've done in the previous years, will be delivered directly from the manufacturer's warehouse to the school. And that process has been synchronized with the delivery of the textbooks. For this current cycle, Chair, we will be able to cover more than 400,000 learners in grade 7, 8, 9, and 83,000 learners in grade 12. You can see that there's a serious dip between grade 11 from 172 to 82. And it's a matter that we're investigating as to what is it that happens to such a huge number of learners, because it's more than half the amount of more than half the number of learners that we're not able to retain up to grade 12. And that's a national phenomenon. There's a study that DBE is doing to actually check for this thing. The first batch of textbooks were happy to say have been delivered. In fact, this week they are finishing the delivery in Capricorn district. And then as for Monday, they are starting with other districts. Some of the challenges, I think they are important that we know. They are not that, they are not manageable, but the committee needs to know this challenge. We normally have problems, some of these things are not within our control, but we use the contractual obligations to manage them. We normally have logistical challenges about the late deliveries by the manufacturers or publishers themselves. Sometimes we deliver to schools wrong quantities and wrong types because of what we have in the database. I'll get back to that one as what is it as a department on the intervention we've done to correct that. We need to have a very serious retrieval strategy in the schools. But there's no country in the world, Chair, that can afford to buy 100% textbooks every year. Can't afford that, no different. So if we can't have a deliberate retrieval system, to an extent that you even tie that retrieval system into the performance contracts of the principals, we're going to be in serious trouble here. So these amounts of money that we use to buy books are extremely exorbitant. The prices of the books are not waiting for us to retrieve the books. So it becomes important that when the members go to their course for their constituency work, and it's a matter that we hammer into the heads of the trip, all parents, learners, and the school management. This thing must be entrenched into the system that we must retrieve those books as much as we can. What we've been told by the publishers that if these books are properly handled, at least they have a minimum lifespan of 5 years, is by then we'll be able systematically to offer these books. Otherwise, if we have to buy them all the time, we're going to be in trouble. Chair, some of the possible interventions include, in our case, the early procurement as we've done now, and of course the signing of contractual agreements between the department, publisher, and the stationery manufacturer. We need to constantly monitor the logistical arrangement and process that we have. A part of the criticism members will recall is that we have with the textbooks. It's a good thing to have them in the schools, but what then happens when those books are in the school is another matter. The issue of utilization is an issue that has come up quite constant, and it's a matter that we've got to closely monitor. I've stated the issue about the retrieval processes. We must literally enforce this one, and literally entrench it as part and parcel of the system. What we're proposing, Chair, is a radical matter that the committee could conceive. It's a matter that the Council of Education Minister is also considering, that we have centralized production of textbooks. Because you do that, then you are limiting the scope of the trends that are actually living, or employing people around this. But we strongly believe that if we can do this to centralize the production, we maximize on the economy of scale. We'll be sure that what we are producing is what we actually anticipated to produce. It's a matter that we're actually putting on the table for consideration. We've also stated this one at the Rochelle Expo in the book. I think it's a matter that we've got to consider. Moving from that one, Chair, and go to the HR and the COE types of imperatives. What we've done with this one, Chair, is to just show you the trends between 2009 and 2013 March about the employment capacity of the department at the school level. And this slide will exclude the temporary employment arrangements that we have, or ad-hoc arrangements that we have. And at the end of March 2013, our teacher complement stood at about 52,000. You'll see the significance of this slide. The numbers now may not mean anything, but you'll see the significance of this slide, which I'm sure would make everybody to think differently about this. This is the support that we had in the schools, and you can see the rate at which it's been dwindling. We had the highest number in 2009, and steadily the numbers have been decreasing up to March 2013. As the situation we find in the special schools, fortunately with this one, has been this up of this thing stabilized between November 2012 and March 2013. And that's the support we have, which of course is not adequate with these types of schools. Okay. And the professional support we have there is very, very, this state stands at 20. And because of the nature of these types of schools, you also realize that number is not adequate. And head office, this is the situation we find, particularly with the professional people that we need at that level. That's the head office, district level, as well as the second. Support staff that we have at the end of 2013, March 2013 was 2,580. Lots of vacant posts in this area. When you look at those numbers, check and try to translate them into the money, you find a very strange type of a phenomenon. MEC Masebola, when he was able to explain this phenomenon as to how it arose over the years, spread in 2018 up to 2020. But what we want to show to yourselves, that if you look, for instance, in the cluster 2010-18, you will see that the budget for the COE on the lighter blue side of the bar was 15.2 billion. And the actual cost was 15.8 billion. The variance of 600 million, as you can see. Obviously, that money did not come from Federal. It came from our location. We had to reprioritize our programs to push the COP budget. So that's when this expanded most of the years where money had to be used to move from our core mandate to actually insulate COP. The following year, there's a slight difference there, although, again, there's this type of a trend that required. The difference there between the budget and the actual was about 122 million, as you can see. But at the end of the year, 2013, we had a positive type of a situation. We saved rather than robbed the other province. It doesn't mean that we didn't do so. But the extent to which we did that was far less than the previous 2 years we've illustrated. Because we managed to save there an amount of about 300%. But in real terms, you might have seen in the presentation that was made by Treasury, but the province in the COE budget, because of the austerity measures that are put in place there, saved about 329 million. And out of that amount of money, 327 came from education. So which then suggests that these austerity measures that relate to HR are beginning to bear fruit in the department. Part of the problem, it may be a bit pervasive to say it's a savings. I've indicated the level of vacancies that we have at the teacher level, at the professional level for health and schools, and at the support staff level, up to the head office. So it could be possible that while we're celebrating the monetary savings, that the savings are because we're not appointing people where we want them. Another phenomenon that would be to state, unfortunately I don't have our time to get the exact amount of money on this one, Chairperson. The phenomenon that we have picked up, that the province pays its teachers more than anyone else in the country. And if we don't know, this study that Treasury is doing is a study that is beginning to tease that out as to how that came about, why is the value to teach in Nepal more than the value to teach in another province. So it doesn't matter what post level you're thinking about, all the post levels in Nepal are paid higher than post levels in other provinces, for almost the same amount of work that they do. And we're trying to justify that in monetary terms, not what they do. I want to emphasize the point, maybe there may be differences there and there about the nature of work that they are doing. The real situation that we're finding, it's not just little money. I think the ratio, if I'm not mistaken, HOD is 1 to 1.5. That's the extent of the variance. That it's almost 1 to 2 that we're paying teachers in a poor against the payment of teachers in another class. So it's a mess. Unfortunately, you can't just change that. You can't just, because it's a very contested area, this one. You can't just pray that there's a storm that comes and people get wiped away. You can't do that. It's a matter that we're going to sustain until we find a strategic way to deal with it. Honorable Chair, one of the positive interventions that we've done, you'll recall we had a huge number of teachers, temporary teachers, who were appointed in substantive posts. At the time the committee came, I think it was in October, we did indicate that we had about 2,544 of those temporary educators in substantive posts, and we had about 1,000 in ad hoc posts. We'll not talk about the ad hoc posts, but that one comes because of the nature of the ad hoc itself. But through the agreements 1/2012, and at the end of August, we had absorbed 2,489 of those educators. Are living in MEGA 55. And that strategy is one of the strategies that has become to stabilize the system, one that we know that the permanent people in the system who are profiled against those vacant posts that were profiled. So the placement was in relation to the expertise of the educators and the expectations of the post which they were posted. So we did that exercise and we're very happy with the outcome that we got. MEC has just declared the post provision. You recall, members, that as part and parcel of the agreement, we had agreed with the labor, organized labor, that we will not pronounce on the post provision for 2012/30. We'll do this absorption process until it is completed, and by come 2030, we will pronounce or declare for 2014. and other MEC have done. And there's a huge amount of, in fact, number of educators, and that in terms of the course provision will be able to have savings. And that has been declared. Chairperson, you recall the big march to the Union Building by SAPI in particular, on a number of things that they were actually raising as concerns about, one of which was Roland Alas. And the members will recall that when we reported to yourselves, that we were paying rural allowance, but we didn't see the allocation in our COE budget. And the two consultations, which we thought were fine at the time, MC Masemula will vouch for me on this one. We thought were fine at the time. We terminated the payment of rural allowance at the end of the year 2024. And this is the 7,000 educators that are benefiting out of it. We saw the 52,000 that we have, it's quite a rarity for the province itself. But it became a important issue, that one. So the minister has directed that we reinstate the rural allowance. Of course, we should do that in phases because the January too much was part of us of the arrangements we had for 2012/13 and from April going forward, we had to go use the HR arrangements that we had for this current financial year. We want to say, as I stated, Chair, that we still have a serious problem relating to shortage of teachers in gateway subjects, shortage in curriculum advisors, especially at the second level. What we've done in the department is part and parcel of the organizational realignment. We did something called a service delivery model for the department. Of course, we used the generic structure that was proposed and accepted by CM. We used organizational development models. We also used a study that was carried out by this GPSA called the organizational assessment model, so that we use all that those lessons that are coming from there to literally research the department as much as we could. Of course, that doesn't relate to the posts that are in schools. It's about the organization. The department itself, head office, district, and second. We're determined there that there are posts that head office may not require to have, so that those posts are literally decentralized to where they are required. So it's part and parcel of the realignment, not the method that we are going to looking at. Even if we do that, Chairperson, we have a high vacancy rate on curriculum advisors at the second level. Remember, we have 134 seconds in the province against 10 districts. We've highlighted this at the Lehuta that we may need, as a province, to consider an integrated and comprehensive HRD strategy. Because if we don't have the thing that focus on the demand, supply, and utilization of this more professional in particular in scarce skills area, you may be in trouble. We're just making that for yourselves, honorable members. I want us to look into the second bullet because the slides that we're going into are going to be ones that are saying, that I said will be telling for the members to proceed. We put this graph together, Chairperson, after which we just went through the test hour. When we're doing the test hour cleanup, we did lots of things as part and parcel. We needed to have a clear understanding about the age profile of the employees of the club. And what we found there, which of course has been confirmed by stats, as I say, remember, as part and parcel of the exercise to clear the stats of the statistical base of the department, we appointed stats, as I say, to do a physical headcount of educators and learners in our schools. There's additional work that we'll ask them to do, and this is part of what we'll ask them. Literally profile the teachers that we have. What you see in this slide, Chair, if you look on the left side of the slide, you see those bar graphs are quite low. In fact, the highest would be about 10,000, if you look at that. And if you see this bulge around the age group of 45-49. And this thing tapers off as it goes. But that tells you, out of the 52,000 educators we have, more than half of them are between the age 45 and 55. That should immediately ring an alarm bell for you. Particularly if the feeder, this size is as low as you find. We've got 7,782 educators that are between the 55 and the 65 bracket. So we have an aging educator core in the province. We can't have a strategic approach to deal with that one. That's why I was saying an integrated and comprehensive HR strategy in the province might be useful. You know, you can't deal with this thing in an ad hoc fashion. This educator has all fall from the sky. You've got to have a strategy to deal with that thing. Otherwise, this good work that we're doing in the schools currently, come 5, 10 years and so on and so on, those educators will retire. And unfortunately, we don't have commensurate numbers to replace them. Similarly, Chair, when you look at the age profile of the support staff, you see more or less a similar trend. The more experienced one on this side, on this other background. And there are about 2,300 of them that are between the age group 45 and 55. This is the most serious one, where you have your office-based educator. These are kind of your specialists. You almost have nothing, between the 20 and the 34-year age group. Almost nothing. So we don't feed into that type of specialized service. Basically, that's what it means. And we don't ever feed into the specialized service. But the bulge that you find there is between the 45-year-old up to 59. That's where you have that. So basically, if you were to use the 65 and the retirement age, you can maintain this system for the next 20 years, in fact, less than the next 20 years, in this type of a service. It's a matter that seriously needs to be looked at. We're just lagging this, but it's really not part and parcel of what we're supposed to do. I think they've been irresponsible not to do this analysis so that we know the extent of the challenges going into the future, because the sustainability model that Mr. Dell was talking about in education will be turned around for us. So we needed to do this thing. Can we move away from that one then, very briefly go to this one of the North East schools? This one relates to the norms and standards challenge. You know the policy of North East school applies to pillars 1 to 3. To an extent that the current policy now declares those schools as North East schools. And the 4, 5 remaining schools. Now the extent of this one is what is amazing with the case of the province. Again, we've given you the numbers 5 years from 2010 up to 2012. In 2012, at the end of the year, when the thousand, that's that million, 1.66 million I was talking about, and 1.6 of those were in no fee schools. That gives a percentage of 96% and above. So only less than 4% of the labor population in the province has the capacity to pay these. We're not saying even these ones may not pay if they were required to do so. But because of the classification of the schools, we're saying less than 4% of the learner population has the capacity to pay a fee. But the rest of them are in the non-fee schools. What that translates to is an accomplishment of the freedom charter. Education is free. Basically, that's what the thing may translate. Because it's almost free when it translates to that matter. Chair, the other point that I think is very important for us, in fact, 2 points in this area that would need to state, is the fact that you recall in 2012, we did indicate yourselves that the transfers to schools in terms of the norms compared to 62% of the national norm. This year, even with this exercise that we did with the Treasury for us to be able to procure the books, we were able to raise the stakes a bit and we rounded off the figure 75%. Of the national norm. But again, Chair, you recall in terms of a decision or resolution taken by the Council of Education Ministers, the issue of collapsing Quintal 1-3 into no fee school paying schools did not just come with that. It came with an amount. The amount that was determined was 1,010 subsidy per learner, and that subsidy is on the basis of the norms and standards, which would include both the LTFM subsidy and the transfer to the schools. So it's the total amount of 1,010. So the 75% that we're talking about is only the amount of money we transfer to the schools. It does not factor the LTSM. But what I want to assure the committee about that come 2014, because we have procured the books for all the grades, and the focus will be top up, and we believe the allocation for LTSM will suffice. The amount of money that will be sent, that will be used as the capital transfer, will cover that amount. In fact, it will be more than the 110 when you factor in the allocation for textbooks and the amount of money that goes to the schools. And we wish the members to understand this point, because there's always a confusion here. That people think that the 110 is the amount of money that the school must receive. they don't recall that the 110 includes textbook procurement. If you do central procurement, that portion of the textbook obviously has to come up on that amount of money. But we are saying to yourselves, honorable members, that the biggest chunk of the norms and standards money will definitely be going to schools. That's from 2014. As the matter of Mr. Don was raising yesterday. Chairperson, the things that I want to state on this slide are the two last bullets. Because of the level, sometimes it's a perceived type of a thing or a serious misinterpretation or misrepresentation. You find schools having this phenomenon that they are underfunded. Can I also state the point that part of the reason that the CEM decided on the national catalogue was a study that was done which even revealed that despite the fact that you're subsidizing the schools for procurement of MTS, most of the schools are probably not buying those books. And for us to be able to equalize or normalize that situation, the department came up with a national catalog type of an intervention. But with the central procurement, we are sure that come 2014, as it has been declared in the action plan 2014, that all the learners will have a full coverage of the books. What this do, as far as I was saying, is to top up where there's an urgent need that has been identified. It's not going to be a cut lunch type of a thing, because what we also have picked up in the problem is that some of the schools are claimed not to have the books, were actually stocking those books. Literally stocking. Some of the laboratories have been turned into warehouses by the schools. It's a matter that we are taking up because we need to charge people on that. It was, in my view, for simple interpretation, that is part of the problem. And we've got to find a way to deal with that. So some of the schools wanted to be reclassified in, from particularly the ones in quintile 3, quintile 4, for them to be able to charge this fees. And I don't know, even in quintile 4 and 5, the exemption story does apply. If a parent is unable, they apply to be exempted from fee. So I'm not sure how that would actually help the schools, whether there's an enforcement for children who pay the school fees or not. There's another phenomenon that we're finding, Chair, which is a very concerning phenomenon. Schools are unable to pay the municipalities, or are not paying them. Plainly, it's either they are unable or they are not paying for those services. And if we were to show you there the extent at which this has happened, we're alarmed when we got the debts from the local government, the department responsible for local government in the province. There's a school that is owing more than $1 million in the province. And it's a fee-paying school, no how. That's what makes this thing even difficult to solve. There are a cluster of schools that are former policy schools that are owing municipality more than $500,000. And we don't know where this debt comes from. What day? Yeah? Because people are using this situation in the province as an excuse for them to be literally not comply with the things that they were supposed to comply with. At the report last week, we raised this matter there, and there were resolutions that came up, very telling resolutions that came up from the report. We guided by the MEC and the minister, we've taken the view that we need to settle the debt. If you owe a service, someone is not paying for it, and we've got to find a way to either register that debt for us to recover, or we find a way to absorb it. So that's an internal matter that we've got to deal with in the department. And unfortunately, what is just very strange, Chair, is the time of the year in which this matter is raised. Remember, children are writing exams very soon, that's from next week. And if councils or municipalities have vowed to literally cut that service, we know the ramifications of that. Simply put, it's never like nothing to do with administrative problems that will suffer the consequences everlastingly. And the view that we're taking, the sins of head office or whatever level of administration should not be felt by the innocent children. So we take the view that we will settle the debt and find a way to recover what needs to be recovered. So councils, the Lekutla noted that they supported the view that we put it bluntly at the Lekutla that we will not pay interest, that we didn't owe anybody, but just entering into an arrangement to settle the debt. So it's a give and take type of a thing, and the municipalities will be able to recover what they could not recover as normal circumstances. So we requested an exemption of the interest. And there was a representative, one of the executive mayors, who's a member of SALGA, who said, it's going to take the matter up to SALGA so that there's a 30-day exemption. If we are able to pay within the 30 days, they will not charge us the interest. So when we go back to the province, we'll need to check on where that matter is. There was an agreement there that, because some of the schools even the ones funding to a charging schools, I mean, are charging us rates and taxes. It's not a matter that they're supposed to be discussing with public works. You know, they are the custodians, you know, of land and everything as of the property in the homes. There's a recommendation on that report that the municipalities should actually consider the lowest rates for the schools. Because the majority of these children, 96% of them, as you would have seen, come from the indigent communities who are charged differently from the normal rates. So what we made that request on the inclusion, this matter should be considered that schools pay at rates that are different from the normal rates, whatever the situation could be. So in a nutshell, we've agreed that the invoices will be revised so that we pay within a month at the rate which was supposed to be charged. There's another phenomenon, Chair, that we need to be committed to state, is that when we build new schools or do additional classes, we find some strange phenomenon that whosoever gives us advice on the electricity supply or demand, they give us grids that are way beyond the grid that the school should actually use. We're given grids, it's called an industrial grid or transformer type of a thing. In some situations, ESCOM was telling the MEC that some of the grids in the schools would literally light the whole of Kuruwa. And you tend to wonder why wouldn't there be demand that you're not paying for, because when we get charged, we'll get charged at the level of that grid. So we've agreed with provincial public works and roads and transport that all the engineers that are available in the province will assist us to prioritize this area. ESCOM has committed to the MEC that they also assist us so that we degrade these grids that we find in the schools to the normal ones. And the savings that we will realize when we do that is quite astronomical. Chair, we've stated the point that next year we are doing the CAPS implementation in the last pages, and therefore the normal standards will be skewed towards the capital transfers to the schools. And the other point that I've raised other than the one of the school nutrition, we also want to confirm that the 1.6 learners who are part and parcel of the non-fish schools are the ones prioritized for the school nutrition. It's not a point that we needed to raise, but we thought it was important that we do that as well. Chair, this is another area that is important for us. Remember there was a threat in the province that we may not be able to administer Tabul B ANA as well as annual national assessment. See, the honourable member has like acronyms. She used to like them when she was on the other side. The annual national assessment as well as the national senior certificate. There was that discomfort that we may not be able to administer a Tabul B types of examinations. You'd see the trend that for the lower grades there's been an improvement. We're not happy with it. Can't be content about those levels, because they are lower than the national levels. And the acting agent is also the head of the curriculum section. There's a national strategy that we have. The minister was making a point last Friday to say that our strategies are the best in the country, but we seem to be lagging behind with implementation. We're the best, but we're the worst in implementing. So it's a dialectic that we've got to deal with, so that the best remains the best, even with implementation. But one point state the point that there were 956,000 learners from grades 1 to 6 and 9 that set for the ANA last year. You recall recently they just wrote the ANA. We don't have those statistics. We can make those statistics available at a later stage. With the grade 12, with the national senior certificate, we've given you this analysis from 1996 so that you can see the trends. And you would see the trend with the first bulge, where the biggest bulge was in 2003 and 2004, where the province obtained 70.2% and 70.6% respectively. You may tend to wonder why this always happens. If you track this thing, honorable members, you see where does the curriculum change, you seem to find a thing. All along, I think it's an important point for you to know, because you're doing that research, you told me about. Where does the curriculum change? Appears to be the same. Remember we started with the national curriculum statement, the first one, it was the revised one, and so on, and then became CAPS. Now for the CAPS one, as you can see, we started in 2012. We are not seeing the outcome of that, but it appears that we're starting the CAPS on the high. But we have not written an examination on the CAPS yet. The first examination on the CAPS will be 2014. So we're still doing the national curriculum certificate. And if you look at 2009,
which on this side of the tournament appears to be the lowest, you can see the upward swing that we've been having. But what is important for us to stay chairperson is 2012, the attainment there of 66.9. We'll explain to you that it was not only about the numbers, but also the quality of that outcome. Honorable member, please. Now, the first bullet actually shows the increase. The target that was set with every single assembly for 2012 was 7%. Unfortunately, we could not attain it by 3.1%. But under the circumstances in problem, 66.9 was something that we could celebrate. Because it's a 3% increase from the previous years. We're charmed that there was an increase. You see the relevance of that point when we go down the slides. If you look at this, the second bullet, if you look at 2009 to 2012, and you do simple arithmetic, you see that there was an 18% increase in the output in terms of quantity in the grade 12 CSATP. Now, what is important for us to then speak a bit about the quality of those results? In the province, we produced 15,324 candidates who achieved that level of bachelor. That's the highest pass that we can find in the country. And that was the best in the country. That was in 2012, the year of doom and gloom. We produced the highest marginal passes in the country. Now, thank you, Gigi. Thank you, Gigi. I can see my performance on Craigslist is going to be good. thank you, Gigi. Okay. The top performing candidate in the country came from a Queenstown preschool in Limbo. Top performing girl child in the country. She came from a Queenstown preschool in Limbo. Top performer in the country. That's all I mean. Out of the 27 best performances that were mentioned by the minister when she announced the results, 14 of them came from Limbo. 14 of them. Those are in different subjects, particularly science, mathematics, and technology. They came from the province. In some cases, you find the top three coming from the province, in the country, not only the province, in the country. So I'm comparing the province with the country. Now, where were books and teachers and everything else, and there was normality, absolute normality. Now, abnormality, and every single assembly has a level that we should perform. Now, this is another phenomenon that is worth noting. What we also found out in the province is that the best performer in independent schools who stayed for the national senior certificate was the 27th compared to the other learners in the province. So in other words, 26 top performers in the province came from the ordinary public schools. And the best performer in the entire province in the independent schools who wrote the national senior certificate was the 27th. In the province. So that demystifies this phenomenon that public education is the best education. In our case in Limpopo, we simply have demonstrated the direct opposite, that the best on the independent would be 27 compared to the 26 in the public school situation. So we have a good message to say about our public schooling system, DG. I'll remind you about your rules, by the way. The other phenomenon that is very important to state, honorable members, we had no district in the province that performed lower than 6%. I like the way MEC Masemula used to explain this. He called it the condemned area. If you perform less than 60%, you're mentioned by name because you are in the condemned zone. So we didn't have districts in the province, including Waterbeck, that was the best performing over the years, only districts in the province were above 60%. What we want to say to yourselves, honorable members, quantity and quality of the outcomes, whether you look at ANA or annual national assessment, or whether you look at the national senior certificate examination results, the province performed superbly. And it demystified the phenomenon that we did not have books and therefore there was no teaching and learning. That's the most important point I would want to state here. Teachers found innovative ways to teach, and learners found innovative ways to learn, and those processes complemented each other. We've set an ambitious target for ourselves, and MEC says it's not changing for 75%, and we're doing whatever it takes, not without cheating, to attain that. MEC has introduced a project called Chumanani. I can mention that Chumisano, It's like the old Jerusalem that Professor Kata Asman used to have, so that we encourage our learners to perform even better. Chair, this is a slide that shows performance by district. I will not get into that. I think the last point that I think needs to be mentioned, because it would have been irresponsible for you not to mention this one, is that in 2012-13, we had a disclaimer, well, one of those school departments that got a disclaimer on the opinion. And the areas of qualification, Chair, included assets, and the issue of assets, but the difference with this one, in the past, we did not have an asset register. Audit. This time around we did have asset registers to audit. And the issue was about the completeness or the accuracy of those registers. Part of the problem then, Chair, related to some of our schools in the database having the wrong coordinates than the actual coordinates. If you read from the database the coordinates and you look at that school, you may not find that school. But the school exists. And it was better that related to that. It's not that the school does not take old school, ghost school and pay billions and this thing when it's extrapolated, it extrapolates billions of runs. And it can make a big story if people are not actually careful about dealing with that information. So those schools do exist, we want to emphasize the point. And there was an issue about a misclassification of maintenance projects as capital projects. So those matters when identified, when requested the AG to allow us to correct them, there was an agreement that they would be corrected, but AG took a different position, saying, look, they made the opinion, they'll change the opinion, if we'll agree to correct. But issues that related to commitments that were not committed, there were issues that related to long outstanding receivables, this is where your debt and everything else is coming from. A very simple method, extremely pedestrian, that relate to HR, like capturing of the leave, capturing the appointment or the resignation of those simple, very basic things that you thought that the system would have controlled for it to do some of these things. And this one was an identifiable, which was a problem that looked in your face when you deal with district administration and management. It's a similar issue to have on this one. We've analyzed the root causes very, very openly, Chair, and I came up with an action plan that we strongly believe would adequately address those root causes. And the action plan was quite assured by the group that has been appointed, PricewaterhouseCoopers and the Roma Consortium. We were planning, Chair, to have an interim audit. The difficulty with this one is that the report was made available very, very late. We didn't get the report at the statutory time. Only very, almost 2 months late. But we still want to insist people agree with the AG that we still want to have an interim audit. Unfortunately, between now and the end of the financial year, you can see the number of questions are left. But there are areas that we want to identify, particularly those that really drag us down. And we have that interim audit on those ones so that we can put together corrective measures before the final audit is done. Check the other successes that are there, are issues that the pardon was of one of our reports in the form of in the presentation that I would have stated. I've stated the issue around the personal cleanup, stated the issue around the organizational realignment, we've stated this in April as well, what I will share in your report. We've finalized the customization of the IT system related to education information systems that has been done. CSSA has completed the physical account. We are meeting on the 25th. We then finalize the process. Will they gladly come and present you? They are stuck type of examination. That's a headcount that's actually reviewed. Check. We are filling the promotional posts, particularly principals, deputy principals, Asian kids in the schools, as well as second manager posts, because we strongly believe if we can handle the leadership there, with the contestations of course that we're faced with, at least the schooling system is stabilized. But we still have a problem with the curriculum advisory services. In the absent schools where there is a problem with the professional support services that would require. As I indicated, the team from the consortium have assisted us with those areas. But I'm also happy to say, Chair, the projects, infrastructure projects that are completed are on their way out to public works. That's in terms of Section 42 of the BFMA. We've done the inventory. In fact, we've done more than an inventory. We've an asset register that will hand over to the agency and administrator and just do whatever they need to do so that that problem is prepared. The last one, Chair, relates to scholar transport. In the previous years, we have indicated to yourselves we're 20,700 that are benefiting. This current year, we're sitting at 27. What is important for us here, Chair, if, for instance, the interpretation of no fees paying schools could be actually made wrong. Say these are children from indigenous communities. These are children who are entirely dependent on social grants. And therefore we've got to, in making their access into education easier, so we remove all the bottlenecks that are there. This may be an area that we're under. But you see, this one were conditions that any child walks more than 5 kilometers must be provided with this thing. The social challenges that we're facing where children even walk 2 kilometers and have to navigate through bushes or very criminal infested types of areas may make us determine this policy differently. And if we were to do that, Chairperson, the financial cost that we could go with would be astronomical for us to contemplate this time. At this time, we're sitting at about 150 million for the scholar transport. If we could extrapolate that to the number of learners in the no-fee school paying areas, you can see the extent of the damage that would be. But that amount of money is entirely dependent on learner numbers, distance traveled, as well as the number of days for the invoice to be compiled. So if that number would move from 26,000 to 1.6 million, and we're standing at 150 million now, we can do the extrapolation as to what is it may cost the business. We're just highlighting that one to yourself so that you understand. One of the areas that was not part of us for my break is what the MEC has done, which is they announced her intention to mesh 308 schools. These are schools, Chair, that have 5, 10, 20, 30 learners, and a big number of educators that are there. So that one to the ratio at the province that stands 1 to 28. These schools are far from that ratio. Part of the problem is that you find a teacher doing serious multi-grade and multi-subject teaching. Because we always speak about multi-grade, we don't speak about the multi-subject teaching. And in our view, we strongly believe this is not profitable. So MEC has made the intention known to merge those schools. Of course, some of them may be closed, and people are always asking what will happen to the facility. The government facility. Government will find a way. These things can be turned into community centers, they can be turned into so many things that government may want them to be turned. But that intention has been made. The good thing for us, does it actually organizes the manner in which we can do transfers to schools, transferring money to schools that the school cannot even manage itself, because norms is based on the number of learners that are there. It actually manages, the school nutrition will move with the learners, the FTS provision will move with the learners. The issue that it will clean up a bit is part and parcel of the teacher provision. But we strongly believe that a huge number of educators, some of whom in our views, we don't need to dispose out of the system. Can be turned into doing something else. That's the question of rescuing them and they do something else rather than trying to shape the system. It's a model that we're actually trying to put together at this week. What is it that can be done substantially so that there's efficiency that is used and nobody will end up without a job in the state. Honourable members, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mesa. For the presentation, we must remember that yesterday we got the overall presentation of all the departments. So today we are just going in depth into different departments as well. Having said that, maybe I want to afford the MEC, if she wants to say anything on this. We want to hear your voice. And maybe the HOD after this, maybe we have something to add to that. We also afford you that opportunity before we give to the members to our special. Thank you.
Good morning. We hope
Thank you, MC McCarthy. We must confirm that you were there when the results were announced and your vocal was just flowing. And we were very happy about it after all the noises that were made about people. We must really congratulate you for that. Thank you. Mr. Anthony, I'm sorry I didn't catch your name.
I'm Monica Dickman.
Mr. Matthews has actually covered all the aspects and other benefits. I must say that we were very close to you, so I know the presentation of Fine Art by now, so he has covered it. Thank you very much. The only regret I have is that I didn't do my work in the 4.3 years as a teacher, then and more. thank you. I'll now give over to the members. Honorable Honorable Tivande, the next aside, Honorable Liz, Honorable Joseph. Honorable Mube, followed by Honorable Hatmeni, then Honorable Chan, and Honorable Jacob. Is that order? Oh, I didn't see you. You'll be there.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, I mean, you didn't spring into the picture of the IAC results.
that IB, sorry, IB results. The fact is that these kids did extremely well, and that's the bottom line, they did well. I had a discussion yesterday with a friend of mine who's a teacher in the Eastern Cape about the whole question of these textbooks, fancy classrooms and so on, multi-grade, multi-subject. I'm the product of a multi-grade junior school. Class 1 and 2 was one teacher. Standard 1, 2 and 3 was one teacher, multi-subject. Standard 4, 5 and 6, because Kate had known, you tell it was, we had and 6 in junior school. And I think I'm quite well educated, I think. But perhaps there are members on the other side of the house who may think I'm not so well educated, but we ought to make that outside of the room. It is about the commitment and standards of the teachers more than it is about textbooks and fancy buildings and so on. And congratulations to the paper for putting the system, despite the huge problems that exist in there. It doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't be putting those good facilities, but it's not necessarily the only way of achieving what we want to achieve. I assume, Mr. Matthews, that you're not expecting a fourth challenge on the EU4 merging. I assume that means third of 308 schools, which seems quite a large number of schools. And I'll support you on that, provided the homework's done properly and the children will not die. In fact, will benefit from better facilities at other schools. Because very often, children are stuck, as you say, one teacher perhaps for six grade. Mr. Chairman, I'm doing what I've heard, well, Madam Chair, sorry, I usually have a male chairman. Madam Chair, I'm doing what I don't normally do, is I'm commenting quite a lot today. I usually try and restrict it to questions, but I think that there's merit in what has been done in this department, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry for the order that I took before. I'm changing it. I'm just taking the thing from project direction, which means Honorable Zimbidia, you are the next one. Thank you, Honorable Mahambani. They don't know you. You are Honorable Mahambani.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question is in relation to the HRD plan. And on the page, on the slide, you as the administrator is saying that there is an urgent need for a structured, comprehensive and strategic HRD plan for the province. Now my question to you is, are you busy with this plan, and when will the education department in the province expect it to receive this, or are you saying that the education department in the province must do that with your assistance afterwards or during the session 100? That is my question. And then the other one, Honorable Chairperson, is in relation to the teacher's age between 55 and 65. Now, certainly, we need a lot of teachers to be trained. Now, that is the responsibility now of the higher education department in universities, or if there is coming in the near future colleges for teachers, then that will be their responsibility. But we can't wait on that. We must now try to train the teachers, especially in these age groups. So when a lot of teachers are going to take the package or the retirement, they must be in the younger age teachers to take over, because then we will have the same problem that the health department is having, that is the brain drain. And especially in the lower age groups, we must also train those teachers to fill those positions when they some kind of there's a lot of teachers going into the senior post, and that's not only in the school, but also in our person. What programs are in place? Is there no program in place in the province from your side as administration? What did you do to assist them to make sure that this problem which we can have in the next 10 years that will be solved? And then my last question is in connection with the 38 schools to emerge. Now, usually, Thank you, sir. 308 schools. Now, usually when we're talking about the merging of schools, then immediately there's a problem among the community members, not only the parents. Did you already consult and give this information in that area where these schools are, and what is the current position among the community members and the parents? Do they understand the situation as we as teachers and officials in the education department? My last question, sir, worry about the municipality, the pain of the municipality. That's my last question. Now, what will happen afterwards? The education department will pay these debts to the municipality. And you're saying that there will be some way to get back those payments to the municipalities. Now my question is, from what side or from whom will that debt amount be paid back or taken back? My immediate understanding will be in future budgets you will take it back. But can you just give more direct and clear indication so that we can understand that? Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Joseph. Can I make a plea that we really minimize on the table?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Also, want to acknowledge the progress and the good work and results that come out of our province. And one of the top 3 points, so one is the Facebook of the educators in terms of the large span of their career. My question to you is, maybe just about the previous speaker, is that what is the percentage of trainees in your province or national community? You raised that concern, people are leaving, but you are not saying that so many coming in, and what is the responsible partners or the education being about that? And then the external curriculum, I do not expect people to be 21 certified teachers and give a degree study probably sometime. But I think the other point is the merger of schools. I want to just advise you from the issue of the Western side. It's not just always about the learners and the parents. Sometimes about the educators themselves and their future and their interests and their positions. That is sometimes a delay also, that they are blocking this for their own agenda that they have. But they have their agenda, which we want to share. But that should not become more than the agenda of the future of the learner and the parents. And I have had that experience in schools. Then our last point, I just want to thank you for the initiative you've taken to pay the municipal account. The three speakers are for recovery, but I think this is the initiative.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, please, I take your question. I know that we are standing behind time about the issue of long. The thing is that there are things which we can hold back from the moment. Yes, the feeling is a matter of success. You know, I am saying that, Chairperson, and they are allowed me, Mr. Thomas, you know, when we are very, very happy, and Mr. Lindsay, then my car, Mr. Tom. When one hears people that people do not say talk, we say, hey, come on, come down. And to Mr. Lynch, you say, my dear, it's because we are happy. You know why, Chairperson? the report which was presented yesterday by Mr. Trump and the report which is presented by the team, that means there's the cooperation. The things which were raised before from that time, remember, there was a huge resistance among some of the people. But today, this is different. I'll quote you the pages. Go to this page and go to this page. It means that men, they're listening. Please carry on with that spirit so that we can, disallow. There is those people who call Section 27. I don't know who these people. And it's unfortunately, they were there when they were issuing very negative statements about the Oku. But when the results come out, they were quiet. Of which I was going to suggest, after that they came out here and some of the people from social media to here, they must check. That is serious. Those who are leaking embargoed information from the transcendental world of the papers. And that is not constructive, it's distracting. Because the perception which is created outside is easy as if you are being pushed by Section 27. Why not? It's us, I mean from the government side, who made the initiative to Section 191, that we don't want to kill, we were not kill, but we were encouraging more cooperation and more collective leadership. So you've done that, you have that data. Because our rule of government, if you go through the presentation that Mr. Trump on page 18 about this 7,000 whatever, we had one whatever, and then the presentation of Mr. Microsoft on page 19 and 20, they talk to each other. This is that, this is where Mr. Nicholas, but nevertheless, there is this thing which I wanted to request from you. I wanted you to find out where, simple thing, the coordination between your team and the stakeholders, which would include unions, SDGs, departments, it can be your public works, whatever, because they did give them some payment to some of the people. And also the tribal authorities and local municipalities. You know why you're raising it? In the presentation of yesterday of Mr. Tom, it was identified as a man of the some key elements which were created in profits. I'll put it on page 7 of the presentation of Mr. Tom, where he speaks about some of the things for all intangible feeling. With the creatures which came from the living ground, from the sun, but whatever, comes from those people. Because if you talk about the issues, you talk about local government issues. But I want to remember that where you, I mean, continuously link with us so that we can minimize some of the things can make the Section 27 efficient. Because for them, I'm very much protective for some of the people out here. If they were here, it was wonderful for them. They want to live the life of their highest. That they wanted to see some black music. There are other things which I wanted to do. Yeah. And the issue which you have raised about the issue of hair count. The issue of hair count, if you can take up on board, whether it's of the hair cast and the learners. You see, whether we have achieved goal or not, why? Nobody has raised it. Remember, they did work continuously. There was not, I'll call them something else. Those guys who were delivering. Always textbooks were found in a river, in a water. What measures have been taken against those people? So that we can know them, even if they come to our office looking for tenders, that these are part of the empires. If we may know those particular people, because I think they had counsels of assist that instead of delivering unnecessary checks should deliver correct numbers which are there because two things against the kickers and also the learners. So if you can assist that on those and the companies which are there, because some people have forgotten this is so delivery. It's a sort who is manufacturing those companies because you can play here why they are big companies who are going to achieve that wrong. People so. And then again, I don't want to go long, but since I'm so heavy because of the coordination about the teaching that we have here. And then also, the age of aging, there's something which is worrying me in terms of education. Your problem was among the black years,
around people who are so advantageous going to those high schools. I mean, in the former homeland, you're not lucky because you have institutions like University of Temple and other institutions around that particular area. I don't know what is the relationship. I know that you are doing with it. You have a relationship with them so that you can motivate some people to come and do one thing. Because my experience taught me that kids who were advantageous going very close to those institutions, you do have a lot of numbers of people going there in order to minimize the aging group people are developing those development. But my mama let me be there because they think I'm so heavy, heavy, and heavy, and heavy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chaplain. Yes, we want to give you an accolade for the MEC and the strike of the new MEC. You've done things differently since we met you the first time in March 2012, when the then actually strengthened in a high-toned voice and very annoyed in making the diagnostic analysis of this department, Mr. Cahody. And I was in the chair at that time, and I asked him to respond now. It comes back to my mind. But thank you. The whole issue about the payment of teachers we will take to the Select Committee for Finance when we engage with the Minister of Finance on the MTBDS during next week. The other point is, and it came from your presentation October 2012, where there were 27 vacancies for circuit managers. Then there was a process to fill the vacancies, as you reported in April 2013. I just like to know where are you now? Because the role of the circuit manager is very important. It's a connection between the department and the school. And if there's no reports coming via that route, you will still experience a challenge. So just fill us in on that.
Okay, the first question is now that the central procurement has supposed to be used in Portugal, what is the vice president intended? Is there a department intended to make this approach? The second question is on the government training. I would like to support the idea of the government being to look at the government because it is a show and promote efficiency and effectiveness of the procurement of tests and other goods. And also reduce project corruption in government associated with control. So I feel that's very important. The government has been able to deal with the both educators through the headcount. How does the department plan to ensure that this both educators do not find their way back to the system? Yes. The school that always in the university and the setting of the state. What does the department plan to assist the school so that they don't happen to have this problem in the future? And what actions have been taken against the head of the department or someone who's in charge of this the payment device? Yeah, the department has done very well. I share things with you in terms of improving the situation in Heidelberg. But the issue of the same would like to be all the department tend to do away with and have been bodies in future. The major of schools that we think of the area is hallelujah, you mentioned in your report, we asked this question from the minister last time, what is the challenge in the communication plan, whether it's a big that is asked by my friends, but how do you intend to communicate with us, particularly the community, and also the future of the data, the infrastructure, the infrastructure, I know the minister has mentioned, you mentioned part of this one of the infrastructure, how will the measure unfold?
My former colleague there used to say hard to get. So I'm gonna ask a lot of questions. on the diagnostic analysis, you gave us non-compliance, what was some of the issues with this one, non-compliance with contractual stipulations in the infrastructure program. When I was listening or when I was reading, I didn't pick it up to say, how have you addressed it? The other one is on the 2010, 2011, 2012, I audit opinion were not adequately addressed. Listening to you also, I was unable to pick it up to say how have you addressed. And then on the payment of teachers more than any other province, in your report it says there's continually overspent on its personnel budget between 2007 up to 2013, and you have not found the solution. You also said the educators in Bobo are highly paid more than any other province, and to me it goes to the continual overspending on the personnel. I hear my colleagues are saying that they are crazy. So I'm just saying, you still are stuck in terms of how are you intending to address this. When I was still a teacher, they used to call teachers from the book saying you're overly paid, including Northwest, I'm not sure which numbers now. They were telling us when we asked them how are you doing this, and they were saying no, they had passion from formative business. So those passions are making them to end up not those money. So the question would be, what are the factors? Maybe the one of passion is transferred from vendor to whatever, maybe. But if they are paid from 1994, should they win a job? Because when you retire, what are you going to do? If they're teaching it now. So, from your investigation, what are the factors? 2007, the introduction of the OOSD, rural allowance, introduction of, or adding of languages, African languages, also added some money to the teaching line. Teaching mathematics, also supposed to be overpaid. So what are the factors in terms of your investigation that take them to be a highly paid? Are those, of course, I know that many arguments raised in the lobby in terms of if you have 2 years you are teaching more than 3 African languages, there's an additional money. Teaching math more, teaching physical science more. And then on the
training of educators on CAT is also one of your diagnostic analysis. To me, you have told us in terms of very well trained. What were the mechanisms put in place to make them to be empowered to teach CAT? Because we know that there's microwave and all those stuff, so analysis is not even getting that microwave. The other one is also a shortage of teachers in the gateway process. When results are announced, the focus mainly goes to the gateway process. I think there are five or six of those projects. So if we have shortages of educators in this key project, which may get us to go to universities and or technical funds. I'll add on my colleague Mazaman to say you have identified that there's a mismatch on any of this strategy. What are the measures that are in place to recruit learners? You were saying you perform well. To recruit learners to say as you pass, here are the you need to go for teaching. The students are to which may take them some of the subjects here. However, I know that as you, I want to finish with the aging of teachers. Limpopo used to have a lot of teacher colleges, including the universities that were producing teachers. And when the redeployment started, unfortunately, there was a question of more teachers having qualified for African languages and other things. So then they became unemployable, or they would be the first people to redeploy. And then the closure of the colleges then need to say, okay, because there are many teachers that are unemployed, the students will say, we're not going to take this profession. Because at the end of training, the 4 years or whatever, 3 years, we're not going to be employed. Two, we're not going to go to the training also, because of we'll be the first person to be retrained, because I'm sure that there was a stigma or whatever it was. So what then is the strategy of recruiting learners? Because you don't have to recruit them when they pass, when they're in grade 12. When they pass in grade 10, the question of their career should be clear, because this is the career that we're going to take. So what is the strategy of addressing this? The other one is on the declining of the support staff. Then I also want to lead it with the shortage of teachers. When we were there last year, teacher unions complained, even the SGPs that you met, they complained that this administration makes them to be overwhelmed, because when a teacher dies, it's not the place. When a different support person dies, it's not the place. And so it adds, it overburdens them. And one of your diagnostic analysis also was to address the high vacancy rate. So what I will ask, at what percentage are you now in addressing the high vacancy rate? Because the stakeholders are saying, okay, you may be improving in terms of the cash flow because you closed appointments. When you go and the process avoids, you go back to the question of shortage of the cash flow. Infrastructure performance, question of data. Another question about data. I'm not sure whether it goes to the headcount, but I didn't get it yet. We would see how they have looked into the data, how have you collected the data. On the payment of the municipality, schools in Gauteng used to say we are owing the municipality because the department gives us our money around about August. So they would then argue that from January up to August, they didn't have money to pay the municipality. So what are the sectors that make these schools not pay the rates to the municipalities? Lastly, on the middle schools, were lessons from housing, big housing on the first one, on rate of schools. The whole question of saying if we tell you that we need to gather your intention, and that gathering of the intention is to make stakeholders to make input. The other thing is to contract with the teacher union, because the other people who are the principal in the school and should use them whatever, then when they move from this school to the other, one loses the position. Or all these the time management, they lose their position. And then that makes teachers to resist to the measure. And also the question of this is that if you close the school, take the learners there, and you talk about, you have not yet addressed the question of the learner transport, and that will impact also on this middle school. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. I agree with you. It does need to be checked, you know, sir, because I heard you say that the decision that has been taken, that the municipality must charge without interest. I do have a problem with that, because the municipalities are expected to provide services. So you need to actually negotiate with them. And then there were educators that were at the university, but still are charging salaries. And they were told last time that they were not obliged, after completing at the university, to come back into the system. What is the status? Where are they now? Then the fluctuation in the numbers of educators from 2009, I'm sure for the first 2 years, there were drops around 900. What involves those drops? What was the cost? And the last one is the spending in terms of the conditional grants that pertain to education. How are you going to implement that? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks,
Chair.
Also, I want to thank the committees for the good presentation and what you have presented. I said this should have been the teacher. You know, during our schooling days, when the teacher comes in the class and we teach, he makes a presentation like he did say a general value. But when you ask questions, you find that there is nothing that you want to suit. I will not ask myself to check what I understood. Chair, you said they've normalized the finances of the department. I just want to check the cost of Indian boots. As you look at the Indian boots, you find that most of them, they are at the office base. And maybe you say you have balance, but immediately when you employ those people, you find that you still have a deficit. That's why I'm saying, just want to check the cost of those maintenance. And the issue of paying higher salaries in comparison with other provinces, why are you afraid to standardize? Because I think it has to be standardized that with payments that are made at this standard. You don't have to be afraid. If they challenge you, you have to go to court to defend that. Because I remember in the first day that there are office based teachers who are still complaining even today that they are not paid money that are the same as other provinces. They have challenged the department, but nothing is proceeding. So I don't see the reason why you have to be afraid to spend money. On the issue of rural allowance, I'm not so sure that this is a something which is national, or it's only meant for the poor. Maybe you can can just contract, but from the province where I come from, known as a rural adult. Maybe it's something that is only done in your province. And also, on the issue of aging teachers from the province, I'm not surprised because public service normally is a stable profession. There is a fixed security, that's why you find people are not normally resigning. And also, there are few posts that are created so that you can have new entrants. That's why when you also look at the office based educators, they are the same, but they are people who have been there teaching for a long time, and now they get promotion and post. That's why you find that the age group is still the same. From the educators who are old, those who are in the encouraging those in the SOC-based educators. The other thing I want to understand, classification of normal schools. When you checked that, did you ascertain that these schools qualify to be normal schools? Because sometimes people will just make an application whereas they don't qualify to be normal schools. On money that are owed to the municipality. I think one of the problems of the municipality is they don't budget for payment. That is good, they don't budget for it. So maybe if we can encourage that in their budget, they should also, they must always include money for paying. And when it comes to airport, I think maybe the department also does has come to pay special. Because I know big companies, there are special rates that are paid to airport. They don't pay the rates that we are paying. So I think if you can negotiate with airport that you pay special rates. And the last one. I just wanted to say that we are doing the good job, but the issue of transparency of this, and we have now, that is the mission that should have been done by the issue. Just to check how much you have done on what has been done by the state in an education service or any other department which was under administration. And I said, the education is that not the education you have, but she is only an action issue. And maybe there will be somebody new who will come in and then start on the beginning. My main concern is about the process of it. Because, as you said previously, you don't want to move out and then you go to the request. So that's my main one. Thank you.
go to the same place, they will differ according to kilometers and make sure that an effective solar transport, they will use that friendly infrastructure, both the roads and bridges, so that our children are not exposed to satanic tendencies that we are seeing. Our children, a girl child, they are getting raped, they are being used for ritual healing, they are being used by drug lords, they get into something between the foot and foe. And please, we would like to see our children safe. We are very skilled education wise, but socially, we do not need to alleviate a problem by creating another problem.
Now we have to make you take one something to your assignment. Okay. I want to have a support by my son to use this support. Please be sure.
Okay.
With this 80 to 20.
about different phenomena that relate to HR that we're faced with. I'm not going to highlight any of them because I'll create an impression that it's more important than they are. We are not one of them. We're not bad when it compares to when we compare with other provinces, and it's not ideal to accept them. Because if you have a 23 billion budget, 90 of which goes to compensation, and I'm including additional grants, you can see that it's not an ideal situation. We have just more than a billion to propagate your common programs. So it's a matter that we've got to deal with in the province. The Honourable Member spoke about the comparison we didn't put on the IEP. IEP are specifically for private schools. So there is, in my recollection, there is no public school that takes that examination. It's an exclusive examination that is done by independent schools. Comparison we're making in the province, which is generally across the board. It's not only because of the one learner who was 27, but it's a comparison we do across the board so that we see the performance on that level as against the performance on the other side. But the point is not taken because if we were to subject our public school learners to some of this AP examination, I don't think they'll be doing as good as they are doing in the public school examination. Because there are various factors that want to contribute to that school. The comment on the multi-grade, multi-subject teaching is well taken. We do agree that these teachers that do multi-grade and multi-subject teaching are not necessarily bad teachers. In our view, they are well-equipped and very versatile educators that can navigate in some situations even outside their profession or their area of training, and we applaud that. We're not using that as a negative phenomenon. The issue for us, we compound the thing by using the infrastructure that the children are exposed to, whether it is viable to even run that type of an institution. It's in a situation where you find 9 learners and 8 educators. And you see the cost to run that school is more than what you just desire to sustain the teaching and learning for those learners. So if we were to make an argument that they get taught, it's not that we're taking away their constitutional right, we still want that level, but we've got to do that as economically as possible. We've got to create a situation where you have one-on-one. The ideal ratio has met all pedagogic types of standards, the 1-35, for secondary schools, the 1-40. So 1-1 is not ideal. It would create serious problems for us. The issue about the HRD plan, this area was a province-wide type of an area, but because of a resolution in an extra level, the person who's managing the HRP was deployed to the Department of Education. The tendency with that, because this is a transversal function, the tendency with that is this thinking that it's an education-based type of an activity. So that becomes that this phenomenon or some form of resistance that people would want to participate, even make funds available for the overall training of everybody in public service. It's a matter that we're raised and it's a matter that it should be looked into. To an extent, that is the realigned structure of the department. We're strongly proposing that function must revert to the previous office. Well, that's where the transversality topic will be uniform. It will be done, everybody want to participate in it, and deploy people into the program and deploy the resources into the program. For now, there is no concrete plan. Partners appear to be doing their own things. In education, the members will recall that lots of educators were sent to Bed, University of Venda, University of Limpopo, University of Natal, and all lots of sort of universities. Particularly at the time, we're focusing on foundation-based teacher training. And can I correct the submission made by the Honorable Member Jacob Way, who was saying these educators are not compelled to come back to the system. That's a condition of them going to the university. In the first place, and then come back and serve with the fund. To retain that scheme and to actually get fruits from the trade that we have done. So that's not an option. It's a matter that will be done. Yes, we do agree. Curriculum advisory, you can't have age group at the moment, because you don't teach for curriculum advisory. People grow into it. It's an experiential type of a learning process that will not propel you into that level. We're confirming that is, I would have been worried if there were 100 people that you would see at the 24 age group. And it would have been a very strange type of a phenomenon. Yeah. what will happen is celebrating the confirmation that we don't have any parliament in that period. And the bell curve begins to come at the data age 245 and 65. The difficulties that we are having is that there appears not to be a direct link between that age profile of educators with the age profile of the curriculum advisory service. So it appears to us that people are stuck where they are. And this FSA investigation seems to be confirming that. There's no growth into the profession up the ladder into the profession. It doesn't happen that way that you're automatically promoted to apply to get into the next level. I'm not sure it's a matter that may be systematic and we may want to have to get. It's not an area of intervention, but it's a matter that globally, that I think in the country, would be where the strategic position of power. Can I speak also about the issue of the merging of schools? They are processes in law that we got to follow. One, the MEC or the executive authority announcing the intention, which is what the MEC has done. And after the announcement of the intention, there's a 3 months consultation process which arises from the gazetting. You cannot circumvent the process, even if the mention was requested by the communities themselves. But somewhere along the line, if you don't have a reference in law, there's institutional memory that people will literally conveniently dispose of. And you get taken to court as litigation that will come up on something that was initiated by the same community. In that case, even in cases like those, even in cases where the communities have even enforced the measure, that would include those schools in the measure so that they are part and parcel of the legal process. We don't want to leave this one to judge. So at this stage, it's at the consultation process. MEC has had consultations with all our stakeholders, teacher unions, educational associations, and everybody who matters in this area. The extension of course with both specialized meetings and our courses so that they be part and parcel of the process at the end of the day. Okay, globally, can we deal with the emerging of schools in that way? Yes. The issue on the debt of the municipalities. There are various ways that one can deal with this. Remember, the debt for municipalities or any services that relate to that are part of the norms transfers for the schools. If we're to bail out the school, it's a double jeopardy, basically. We're carrying the second cost or a cost we've already paid for. And the issue about schools not prioritizing these areas because they are using some loophole that they might have defined or determined for themselves around the fiasco now, because apparently schools use the financial situation in the Bronx, particularly when the norms value was reduced in 2011-12. They use that latitude of not doing these services that are prescribed in the norms that you must prioritize when you disperse of the norms themselves. In this case, it appears that this one of the municipality service, it was government looked at as owing government, and schools took themselves out of the equation of the government family of institutions. So they did not regard themselves as creating a debt as a government entity for government. As long as that money is with them and they will use it as they determine, maybe within or without of the norms, that's a matter that we're constantly monitoring. And unfortunately, we don't have the resource that we want to have for that strict monitoring. That would need to intensify that type of an area. There are two things that we can do very quickly, honorable members. It's either we can pay off this debt and write it off, something that's within the norm, or we can pay off the debt and still deduct from the norms. But it becomes a joke where, for instance, the lender numbers are low. But if you have to deduct, you deduct for the school, not one. Even if you make an arrangement, over here, some of them at the level they own, you can pay for their lifetime. Maybe that school will be much longer time with the debt of the department. And the issue then, when you have to deal with your financials, you want to have a debt of somewhere along the line, you still have to take a decision to write it off. So it's a matter administratively that we're looking into. But what we do not want to do is to have a situation where schooling, particularly at the exit stage of that school calendar year, that would want to disadvantage those children. So administratively, we'll deal with the matter. The issue of not paying into interest, honorable member, it's a matter that came from the municipalities. So we made a request, and they acceded to that request because they've never claimed against the department, so the department has not defaulted necessarily. When those debts come to the department, They will be coming as the first invoice. So what we need to do is to apply to the 30-day payment period. So if we are within that period, we don't infringe on that period, then there's no reason to charge us interest. So they're interpreting the law. It's not a matter that is enforced on it. It's a matter that they propose. The Honorable Mayor said that it's better to get a little potato than not to get the potato at all. Just using that standard of the potato, because I heard about it. I hope it's not a rocket joint. I hope it's not. If it is, I apologize. The issue of the age group of the educator as a percentage of the trainees, here I must concede honorable members were a bit vulnerable. There's no deliberate training program that was engaged. There's absolutely no deliberate. But that's why I was saying, if maybe we had a province-wide HR strategy and plan, call it development or management or whatever, all these things that we can attach to it, it's a matter that as a province we then can begin to deal with. Otherwise, we're doing what we prioritize. And in this case, we prioritize the coalition phase. Because we strongly believe we can have those well-trained educators at that level. And remember, foundations are the mother of all foundations. So if we can have it right there with the proper trained educators at that level, the view that we're having, as they move up the ladder, this can be properly prepared. So it's a matter that we're going to deal with. The HOD has been taking copious notes on that one. And it's a matter that we're going to deal with. And the Western Cape experiences on matters, we take note of that. We take note of the comment that we made that relates to Section 27. But I can say that the MEC did have a meeting with them. There seems to be some change of their notes now. We seem to be singing, appearing to be singing from the same hymn sheet until, of course, there's a problem that would arise. Of course, they are within their rights to do so. The coordination and consultations with the relevant authority or stakeholders, that is constantly done and we keep on improving on it. That's why Mr. Long raised the matter of public relations. It's a matter that we're intensifying. The issue of the textbooks that were dumped, we had responded to this question in the several meetings we had with the members. But what we can say, we have open cases on this one. The problem with court procedures is that the proceedings, that these matters get postponed. Remember this thing happened around Mopan in the Bay. So that case has been postponed, that is postponed for the third time now. There's no verdict on it as yet. So can we just say simply just it's a matter still subjudicated. The issue of the former homeless having lots of HEIs, we take that comment, but we also wish to remind the members that the Department of Higher Education and Training is considering reintroducing these colleges, including nursing colleges and other such. I know the Agriculture Department is reintroducing agricultural colleges. So it's a matter on the table for discussion. Maybe the members, especially the Education and Recreation Board, I mean the SLEC Committee, can assist in that process. Yes, Honourable Member, in April we did indicate that there were 27 vacancies of SLEC managers. We have appointed where it was appropriate. But in some of the cases, I think in about 12 of those posts, there are serious contestations that the MEC is dealing with. Serious allegations. And it's not matters that can fall out the window. Some of them appear to be substantive complaints which are based in law and you can't just put them away. You've got to call MEC is applying a mind around that one with the assistance of the legal services department. But we've appointed where we're comfortable with the processes.
How many vacancies did they have?
There were 27. Remember this thing is not static. It moves on because of attrition realities. My recollection, HOD will assist me. In the past 3 months, we have seen submissions that are requesting the appointments acting in 4 seconds. And it appears to me these are new seconds and not the old ones. Now, whether that destabilizes or creates some state of flux with the previous number or not, or it's one of that number that we'll have to check. Can you just say, Honorable Chair, we'll provide the committee with it? Where we did not answer, we'll still provide the written answer. The issue of the ghosts did not only get cleaned up with the headcount, it also got cleaned up with the personal cleaner. What we need to ascertain, it's a matter that the colleagues in personnel are actually dealing with. We raised the question, when these posts that were unfunded were part of the personnel, did we pay on them or not? Because if we're paying on any of them, then we would have resuscitated the ghosts. So we want to be sure about that, but so that we don't respond on this question out of 10 and misinform the house. At this stage, we don't have that information. We'll take it up with the department on that one. A dead man has come up with a disclaimer, but yes, the issue on the disclaimer, we can confirm what the AG confirmed to us, that the department has moved leaps and bounds on this one. The AG even said to Mr. Dong, that a disclaimer is a technical term. Basically, the department should have not been disclaimed. But because of the misstatements and these things that they sorted, the only technical term they could use is that of a disclaimer. We're not worried about that. There are lots of things we can say about the process, but allow us to say the issue for us is not important, but that we seriously understand the root causes so that we deal with the root. If the root cause is a person, we will deal with the person. It's the extent of robustness that we want to deal with this matter. If it is systemic or something that is related to the process, we would want to clean that up and sustain that type of process. So it has become a project on its own, why it cuts across all the other processes. And there were a lot of questions that were related to non-compliance. Honourable Member, can I just say the questions that were raised on infrastructure are part and parcel of the sustainability project on infrastructure. Sustainability project on compliance and interpretation. So we clapped all those things because there's lots of them. Not only on infrastructure, it's also supply chain management types of processes. For instance, this area, the misstatements that we got on HR-related matters, I mean, we should not be disclaimed on HR. Capturing of leads. Goodness sake, what is that? But it does happen. All those things we have come together as part and parcel of that project. The issue on the high payment in the country, we take the point. We cannot give you a single type of effect on this one. The reason that Treasury is doing a broad investigation on this matter is because we want those answers. What are the contributory factors to this thing so that when we respond as technocrats, not as educationists. We want to seriously respond like bureaucrats on this one. Because the whole matter, so that a honorable chair, when you take this matter up with the budget structures of government, you will be properly informed about it. My advice is that that's all going to be until Mr. Rent is able to provide the information. The directive comes from the premise office, that exercise should be. Paying on tests, it has happened at different degrees. I like your thing, you used it when you were a unionist, the microwave training. You are still using it as an empty, in the need to uproot your roots. Unfortunately, the training on curriculum implementation is structured in a given way, as you know, honorable member, and agreed with the unions. In an ideal situation, we would take a group of educators and literally take them to a higher education or institution for proper training. But unfortunately, the microwave training is an entrenched training process. And to get them into one place, maybe on school holiday or for a week or that type of thing. It's not about the content of the pedagogy, the method of that actually, and sometimes you advise among the content as to how they navigate through the content. Unfortunately, it's still what you left in the union is called microwave training. We're still stuck with that. That would include training on gateway subjects as well. But remember, in the province, we also have our own institute, and where MEC has instructed that we convert it into a curriculum delivery institute. If you have the white paper, there was a national institution on curriculum development, and we are creating, it will be maybe the best. MASEC is now going to be expanded to be that type of an institution delivery institute. And she's saying in 5 months in that post, she would want to see that. As a flagship program, so we're working on it. Honorable Chair, the issue of raised on spending on conditional grants, that question was dealt with by Treasury yesterday. I'm not going to be fancy about the spending on conditional grants is not rosy, not at the level that we wanted it to be. But we will not encourage careless spending because we want to see the money going. If the conditional grant framework is not met, we do not sign. AGDFI do not sign. It has to be in terms of the framework, it must be in terms of the procurement plan. If it is not in those two, we don't sign. Unless there's a compelling reason as to why we should give you it. Yes, the MECT have a meeting with ESCOM. They have agreed on the specialized rates that are coming from ESCOM. That's also a matter that is difficult. In fact, we got sensitized by ESCOM about how we were being ripped off by these consultants when they do this thing. Can I just say to the honorable member, the cooperation with the Department of Roads and Transport is for that department to assist us with compliance. We are managing scholar transport in the department. So it's a decision that we take, all they do is to check on the condition of those vehicles and whether the drivers meet the requirements on the road. So but we do cooperate with everybody that they believe in. The issue of the road infrastructure is an important one because of the inclement weather in the Popo. You may find the old bridge shut down, and this has happened last year. And we've got to find ways to deal with that. And we do take the point that we don't want to solve the solution by creating another tenancy. The issue of the closure of schools, honorable member, is not related to whether teachers teach or they don't. The issue is that for us to be dealing with the stigma, in my view, we should not create anything that's not existing. The issue there, part of those, in fact, the reality, as the honorable member earlier has indicated, what a great teaching in my view and what a standard teaching should be celebrated. The issue is that the numbers that they're going to deal with is the method that forces us to consider the management of the schools, not the level at which they navigate through character. That's why we convinced you that that's the case. But we do take the point that this thing must go with the redeployment of people into other spaces. Any last question related to rural allowance? This is a national policy, Honorable Chair. The national policy that was introduced by Honorable Minister Pan when the time was Minister of Education. Criteria that are determined or defined that we are supposed to follow. And all of them are dependent on the qualification. But the tendency with application is that we apply the distance from the nearest serviceable town. That's where this thing becomes, in our view, wrongly implemented. Because the other things, the criteria that relate to English subjects and all these types of things are not considered. The thing was introduced when Minister Bando wanted to encourage educators to go to rural schools. It was like an incentive to keep educators in most rural areas of the country. Because there was an exodus out of those countries, especially when the OSD arose. And there was an exodus out of the rural areas into the more urbanized types of centers. So for her to be able to keep those teachers there, the rural allowance was introduced. So there are three criteria that are introduced. At the time, we were looking at this thing. Initially, it was introduced for an entire period. There was money that came from National Treasury for that entire period. When we looked at the budget, we could not see the item. And it's clear that it's one of those areas that we're paying to create a breach. But when we didn't have a direct allocation for it, particularly so that it was an incentive. So we stopped. When we reintroduced it, it was a matter of reintroducing it because there was a directive for us to do it. It's not that the money is there. But you would have heard the HOD from Treasury saying it's another matter that we're actually looking because we'll continue to blame the COD if we don't deal with it systematically. I apologize, I might have taken the long route. I think I've done the best with 5 pages of questions. But we'll still respond to those that we can respond. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'd like to make a follow-up on the administration rule because I didn't hear you responding to the sustainability of the first when the system would have been implemented with the last presentation.
Can I use my musical voice? I think it's something I can project. Honourable Chair, with the member of the call, I did say at that meeting, in our response to the diagnostic plan, we as a department did an implementation plan arrival, intervention plan arrival. In the department, I am as alone as I was in May 2012. And there is no way in the world that I have managed to carry such a huge department alone without management of the department. So all the solutions were found with the executive management committee involved and the implementation of those solutions. I have a good executive management leading them and everybody in the SNS management. So we created our own sustainability at the beginning. The outcome was determined at the input stage. So we're convinced that the things that we have, barring challenges that may be humanitarian, human or artificial, we are convinced that the sustainability guarantee particularly shows that this intentional sustainability project is not intentional. We are very convinced that we're getting some. The other issue related to what Mr. John reported yesterday on the project-based planning, we've got about 12 of our senior officials that participating in that program to entrench the change management that we're introducing. There's also internal training that is done by PwC as a former department that related to change management or entrenching something for the project that has identified as so we want to be convinced that there's a change of ethos, a change of doing things in the department, business as usual, has become easier than usual on the project. And we hope that that kind of ethos will remain even up. I don't think they would have been excited by my presence to meet the whole staff. I think they got excited because of the view that they had in the other department.
And this should also be extended to the district
but we'll also look at the proactive manner of dealing with the complaints, as well as talking to clinicians and clinical leadership to deal with the adverse events before government is sued. Because most times we get sued because we do not respond to complaints in an appropriate manner to the community.
Yeah, I think we're saying that Thank you.